This week's Crossman Conversation is brought to you by FAMU College of Law, Frontier Partners, First Horizon Bank, and Maynard Cooper & Gale PC.
The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
The Crossman Conversation is hosted by John Crossman. John's heart is to see our community of leaders unite around what we have in common. John will be joined by political leaders, religious leaders, as well as activists making a difference in our nation. Here is your host for the Crossman Conversation, John Crossman.
Hello, this is John Crossman, and welcome to the Crossman Conversation. Mike, before we get started, okay, yeah. I got to tell you a quick story.
This has never happened before.
I just got to tell you this quick story. I don't know if you know this about me, but at one point in my life, I was asked about being a model. Did you know that?
No.
Yes. And it was a before model. You know, it was like Slim Fast before, oh. You know, that kind of thing.
I thought you
That's
said floor model.
No, before, like what you would look like before, like you got
before
the
and after.
Like,
yeah, right.
Before Botox, you know, that kind of thing. That's a joke. Well, you know, I'm so excited today because we actually have a model as a guest. And not only is she a model, she's an author. And she's, I would probably call her an influencer. And she's the founder of the Blatantly Honest Foundation, Michaela Nichols. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's so awesome. And you're going to let me call you Mac.
Yes.
Because your friends call you Mac. And I like that. That's a cool name. I like that.
Thanks.
It's Mac. So you began your career as a model. Is that correct?
I did. Yeah. I was 14 years old.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
And how was that? Was it as exciting as it sounds?
It was very exciting.
Yeah.
I met a lot of awesome people, lived in some cool places. And I got to wear awesome clothes.
So let's break this down. Tell me two cool places you lived.
I have to say New York City, just because
sure.
I absolutely adore New York City. Like right and kind of, you know, the theater district almost. And then just to be basic and, you know, cover the other coast, I lived in Studio City, which was awesome because I was, you know, right around all the movie sets. And so, I don't know, it set my my bar really high for my aspirations.
That's awesome. Now, when you say you got to wear cool clothes, in my head, I'm like, was it like the softest hoodie ever? Like, that's what I think.
Yes,
when I, say cool.
I have worn a lot of soft hoodies. That's for sure.
But is it what makes cool clothes like as a model? Is you're like, oh, John, it was this designer or it was this cool look. What made a cool clothes for you?
I've got to be honest with you, John. Honestly, like some of the clothes I would never wear on a daily basis, but it was just like the most interesting. It felt like very like Hunger Games esque. Like it was just crazy clothes. And I was like, oh, my goodness, like this is really cool for, you know, the shoot. And then absolutely never again. So things that you would never wear in a million years, I got to wear, and like just the colors and the shapes. And like one time I wore a parachute, like literally a parachute.
No
that
way.
Was pretty cool.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Was it, did you like having professionals like do your hair and makeup? Was that
yes.
fun?
Yes. It's
that
funny. Thing? Everyone's like, oh, I'm sure you know how to do really good makeup. I'm like, actually I don't, because I never have put it on myself. So I'm trying to learn.
So this is for Mike, just so you know, this is Mike. I actually ran a charity event in Las Vegas, every year for several years in a row. And so for several years in a row, I got to work with a different comedian. So one year I got to work with Dana Carvey, Dennis Miller, Kevin Nealon.
Uh-huh,
a couple
goodness.
Times I was on stage with them and, you know, just some different. So that was kind of cool. But one year when I was on stage and I had to like be on right before Kevin Nealon, they had to do professional makeup on me, which I'm obviously not used to. And they did where they like airbrush it and stuff.
Yeah.
And they are very close to you. It's a very intimate experience. You know, I was like, so where are you from, ma'am? You know, so but I got to imagine that's a thing. Mm-hmm. Right. So then like then going back to normal life, was that weird transitioning to doing your own thing?
It was, but it was a really cool experience to have under my belt, so to speak. And then, you know, transitioning back, I'm like, I can speak to someone really close and not feel weird. So I'm sure they're like, get away from me, Michaela. And I'm like, yeah, well.
So did you get to meet any like super exciting celebrities? Did you meet a celebrity and you're like, oh, that was so cool to meet blank?
One of my first movie premieres that I went to was actually, it was like Captain America Civil War. And
oh, wow.
So like literally the whole cast was right there. And I was like, oh my gosh, like that's Captain America. Like I was totally fangirling. He was really cool. He obviously wouldn't remember me, but I was like, oh my God, like it's Captain America.
Right. That's pretty exciting.
It was. It was like, I was like, you have to keep your composure here, Mac. And then, so.
Did you ever, is there anybody like in that whole world that you didn't meet that you thought, oh man, I never met so-and-so, but I would love to meet blank, as far as like somebody that you didn't get a chance to work with? And what I'm trying to reach for there is like, you know, I a lot of times I ask athletes about a coach, they never got to have as a coach. So I don't know if there's like a big time person in that world that's a big deal to you. Maybe not a big deal to me, but you would say, oh gosh, I never got to work with Versace.
Honestly,
or something.
Yeah. I mean, brand wise, I would love to work with like Gucci. I think they're mm-hmm. like really cool. They're working on a lot of like inclusive things, which is awesome. But as far as like models, not really. Mm-hmm. But obviously Cindy Crawford is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, she's very philanthropic. And so maybe someone like that.
Well, I just want you to know that she and I are close to the same age, which means I'm still cool, right?
Yes, you are cool.
Yes. All right. So let's transition this a different direction. Like, is there a downside to modeling?
Yes. I'm so happy you asked. Yeah, there is. I, and we'll talk about this later, but with me, I struggled with my body image. I mean, I still do to this exact day. I had two eating disorders when I was young because, you know, little 14-year-old Michaela was told that she had to weigh a certain amount, she had to look a certain way, her hair had to be this color, and, you know, you do all these things because you think that's what you're supposed to do.
Sure.
And I definitely lost sight of who I was through it. I mean, yeah, there was a lot of cool perks, but also it took a toll on me.
It's so funny. I was thinking about you today. I was sort of preparing for this, our conversation. I ran track in college, and so I've always loved athletics. And so when the Olympics always come up, I love watching all the different events. And my daughters were kind of like maybe middle school age, whatever year it was. And I was turning on like the women's 1500 meters or something like that. And what I was trying to get across to them is like, hey, look at these women. And I was trying to say, you know, they're college students and they're so amazing. And my goal was trying to be inspiring in a healthy way. And so later that night, I was sitting on the front porch, and one of my daughters came and sat beside me, and she was like, Dad, like, you admire those women, and their bodies don't look like mine. Mm-hmm. And I immediately, I felt so devastated. And that was really like my first introduction to be like, man, I really got to be thoughtful about what I say and how I affirm, because it's a big deal, right?
It is. And especially, I think, you know, comparison is the thief of joy, right? And, mm-hmm. It's so hard, especially when you're in that industry. Like, I've seen photos of myself like in magazines and whatnot, and I'm like, I don't know who that is because that's not me. Like,
right.
I don't look like that. And I think a lot of young people, to your point, like they compare themselves to others and they think that, you know, someone else's body type is the one that they should have.
Yeah. I would have to think too that probably some women, you know, younger women particularly, might look at you and think, oh, I wish I looked like Mac. And what they don't understand is like, what you look like, it also ends up what you attract. Mm-hmm. And that's not always the healthiest thing.
Mm-mm.
Like, doesn't mean, you know, like if you and me and Mike were at a party together, Mike and I wouldn't come up and talk to you. Like, we're nice guys, but we wouldn't go talk to a tall single woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
We would in a context if you were introduced to us. But the kind of guy that would come up to you, particularly 14-year-old Mac, it's probably not I'm not trying to stereotype, but you know what I'm saying.
Like, I do.
Like, that's a dangerous thing, right?
It is. 100%.
So it's Yeah. So like when some, you know, younger girls are trying to look older or look a certain way, they need to think about what am I attracting to me and what's mm-hmm. the motive of that person? Am I on the right path?
Nail in the head. but yeah, no, it's true. I mean, that's so accurate. I mean, people, it's funny, like I'm like the nicest person. A lot of people just won't approach me. I want to talk to everyone, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm like, I want to talk to you and you. And people are like, oh my gosh, like you're really nice. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like what? So yeah, no, that's very true.
Yeah. Yeah. It was funny. I was actually, I'm in a Bible study and we're doing a Bible study that was written by Vanessa Eccles, TV's Vanessa Eccles.
Wow.
And it was talking about Esther and it was talking about how beautiful she mm-hmm. was. And we were reflecting on that about like beauty and how that is a good thing, right? And it's a human thing, but it can be a bad thing too. Or yeah, it's just like somebody else's life is having a responsibility with it, which is key.
True.
So, all right. Well, let me tell you, we're going to take a break in a second. But before we do, just give me a little wink into the pivot here, because we're going to start talking about you, the author. Tell me just in a little snippet, how did this transition happen to the next phase of your life?
I was in a very dark place where I, you know, contemplated not being on this earth anymore. And I said, I have one of two options. I can either do something about it or I can let it be the death of me. And I decided to share my story in hopes that it might be able to save someone else.
That is so awesome. You know, it's funny is we do a lot for suicide awareness and prevention on this show. And every year as we get to, you know, the time of year when we're doing our big walk, I'll do research on people who have committed suicide. And one of the saddest things, the most common thing when, like, people you know commit suicide, they're all beautiful. Mm-hmm. They're all beautiful. I mean, the volume of really, really beautiful people who really got their look down, but the darkness on the inside was just a huge issue. And so that's something that you had to step into and deal with. Mm-hmm. Real quick, what do you see as the light that kind of got you through that?
Well, I think God helped me through it and really gave me the courage and the power to be able to write this book. Like, I never thought I would write a book. Like, I never thought I would be an author. And it's like I felt something in me to share that dark place and, more importantly, show how I was able to overcome it.
That's awesome. So one would say that you became blatantly honest.
Yes, and sometimes it gets me in trouble.
Yeah. Well, Mike and I have a friend, and he likes to tell me he wants me to be bold, not dangerous. And so I guess that's a sort of thing I do. So we're going to real quick, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with my buddy Mac the model. Okay, and this is John Crossman, The Crossman Conversation. I'd like to thank Maynard Cooper & Gale, PC, for being a sponsor of our program. Maynard is a full-service law firm with over 350 attorneys and 14 offices nationally who serve with professional excellence in everything from corporate and business matters to day-to-day legal issues. The office in Central Florida focuses its practice in real estate, corporate transactions and organization, banking and finance, along with trust and estates. To learn more, visit MaynardCooper.com.
Are you willing to serve communities in crisis around the world to people who are impoverished, oppressed, and persecuted? Frontier Partners International offers mission opportunities in areas least served to meet the needs of the helpless, hapless, and hopeless. Share the love and joy of Christ this holiday season and give the gift of a hope-filled future to someone in desperate need. Learn more at frontierpartners.org. That's frontierpartners.org.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Florida A&M University College of Law celebrates 20 years in Orlando. Since graduating its first class in 2005, the reestablished FAMU College of Law has produced over 2,500 Rattlers for Justice, who are lawyers and leaders here in Florida and nationwide. FAMU Law is recognized nationally for its diversity. It's also known for its impressive faculty and affordable tuition. Your dream of becoming a lawyer is now. Call 407-254-3268 or visit law.famu.edu for more info.
Once again, here is John Crossman.
And we're back at the Crossman Conversation. This is John Crossman and my guest, Michaela Mac Nichols,
yes.
The model, the author, the founder of Blatantly Honest Foundation. You've had this really cool life and this really wonderful career, and it seems like you've had the up and the down, right? And now you're back into neither up or down. It sounds like you're into the healthy.
Yes.
Did I get that right?
Yeah, I am. I am in the healthy. I mean, when it comes to my mental space, when it comes to eating, I'm like, man, I missed a lot of food for a lot of years. So I am catching up on all the food. And just honestly, I've just taken back control of my life. And I think that's the most healthy thing about it.
That's awesome. So tell us about this book. I got your book here, Blatantly Honest. And you're letting me give this to my daughter. That's
yes.
So sweet.
Yes,
thank you
can
that.
Give that to your daughter.
Awesome.
I think it'll be good for her. And, you know, any young person or you. It actually won an award in like best parenting of teens, which is funny because like I am not a parent. And I was like, oh, my gosh. I was like, wow, like maybe I'll be OK as a parent someday.
But is it, I guess it's relatable. Like,
yes.
And so the context of this would seems like people that should read this book are maybe 12 to 19, you know, mm-hmm. and probably maybe girls. And the people that parent and grandparent them. So if there's a parent or grandparent listening to this interview and they have a teenage lady in their life, it'd be a good thing for them to read. So they're kind of, it's kind of like getting the handbook and getting seen behind enemy lines, right? Like,
yes.
In the speak the lingo. Is that accurate?
100%. And I think it's so funny you said that because it is like the look inside like a teenager's mind, so to speak. You know, I started this around 16. It came out when I was 18 years old and it was really just a journal entry. It literally saved me. It was my therapy to be able to write about what I was going through. And, you know, it was funny. I was working out with my dad. My dad and I are like best friends. And this guy who was at our workout class happened to be a book publisher from Dallas, like small world. And he's like, all right, I'll take a look at what you're writing, like, you know, just to help you out. And he's like, oh my goodness, this is great. And then he shopped it around and, you know, internally, and they're like, this is just like a big journal. Like, how is this going to help someone? And I was like, what do you mean? Like, this is my life. This is important. And they're like, you need to take that because it seems like you're really angry and shift that into advice and say, like, this is my experience. This is how to avoid it. And there's actually some, like, you know, tidbits and short pieces of advice in there from other people about what they went through. And I think, you know, there is no guide to being a teenager. And that was, you know, what hurt my heart, because I went into Barnes & Noble and I was like, I can't be the only one who went through this. Like, where is a book? How can I relate to someone else? And there wasn't one. And so I took it upon myself to write that. And, you know, I talk about everything from body image to bullying. I was bullied really bad. I was sexually assaulted when I was 14 years old. It was just all these horrible things happened to me in such a short amount of time. And I, like I said earlier, I had one of two choices. I could let that be the death of me, or I could do something. So that's pretty much young Mac in a book. So it's weird. I look at it like right now and I'm like, I don't even know who that is because I've grown so much.
Sure.
And it's like a snap back into my brain then.
Well, it's, what's so fascinating, I keep coming back to, is like, you know, so many people would look at you and hear about your life and, you know, movie premieres and all this kind of stuff and think you have this perfect life. And like, man, you open up this book and you have these quotes of people said about you, and I don't even want to read them out loud. They're just really mean, horrible things that people said to you or about you.
Yeah, to me, somewhere online. I mean, if you're welcome to, I'm an open book about everything. But yeah, I say those lines like when I'm giving speeches to people, and I'll have someone from the audience like come down and say it to me. And it really just shows the power of words because, you know, there's a saying, sticks and stones might break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And I totally disagree with that.
Right.
Because words do hurt and they do stick. And if someone's in a really poor mental place to begin with, that might be the thing that sends them over the edge.
Right. Yeah. And so and the opposite is true. The words of encouragement can give somebody life, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, just to people, I mean, like these things, I'm not going to read all of them because they're, but some of the things people said, you look disgusting. This one, kill yourself. No one likes you anyway. I hope you will die. Like, people said those kinds of things.
Yes.
That is just terrible.
Can
I just, I'm so sorry that happened to you.
Thank you.
That's just so sad. That's just so sorry. That's terrible.
And I appreciate that. It's just like, I'm almost glad that I went through that because, you know, God gave me the strength to get through it when I didn't think I had the strength to get through it. And by going through it, I think that my story has the potential, and I've seen it change people's lives. And so I'm almost thankful I went through it to make it out.
So, yeah, I have two daughters, and you know, when they were girls, and my oldest one in particular, when she was five, she quit holding my hand because she was a woman, right? And so when she turned 12 and she sort of, you know, went through transitioning and all that stuff, I sat her down in my office and I said, listen, from this moment on, I will never hug you again without your permission. I said, no man has a right to put his hands on your body, including me, unless you say it's okay. And she paused and she looked at me and she said, well, what about mom? And I said, oh, mom will hug you whenever she wants. That doesn't apply to mom. That doesn't work that way. And what I found was that she was a kid that at, you know, 9, 10, 11, wasn't holding my hand, wasn't. And after that, became much more affectionate towards me. But it was all about letting her know she controls her body.
That's awesome.
What are your thoughts on that?
No, I agree. I mean, I grew up in an amazing household. My parents are absolutely amazing. And my, you know, my mom and dad taught me, like, every day I would get out of the car and my mom would say, style and grace, respect yourself, make good choices. And like my dad would say the same thing. And it's like, you know, when I dealt with my sexual assault, especially, like, I was so ashamed of what was happening to me because I didn't understand. Like, I had no intentions to, you know, be in that situation, of course. But I didn't really understand what was happening to me anyway, because this person was like my best friend. It was a trusted person. So I didn't really know.
Right.
And I was really scared to tell my parents because I didn't want them to feel like they did something wrong, because they didn't. And they like kind of prepared me for these things. But once I was in the situation, I mean, I would make marks on my Converse shoe of every day something happened to me. And I would pretty much just black out, like, in the head. It was like I was a shell, and dealing with it, it's almost like unreal to think about it. So it's awesome that you had your that conversation with your daughter, because, you know, my dad did too, but yeah. obviously these things, you know, happened to me.
The and pressure of the world. I mean, things happen. Yeah. Yes. Other people have terrible motivations.
And sometimes they're just evil people.
Oh, for sure. Well, and I one of the reasons I'm so impressed and proud of you is like just telling the story and sharing it. You know, when we think about like whether it's Bill Cosby or Jeffrey Epstein or Harvey Weinstein, when you hear about those cases, and it's like, it's not like three women, it's like 80. Mm-hmm. And then when you hear it's 80, it's probably the real number is like something ridiculous, like 800. And so we have to do a better job in society of telling women, speak your truth. You know, what's funny is I was speaking at a conference and I was talking about how we need to encourage more women. And I made a reference. I said, and occasionally a man will say, well, it's going to lead to false accusations. And a guy in the back of the room yelled out loud. He's like, and that's happening. And I said, sir, it's not happening. That's not a thing. I said, if you were to get the women in your circles to be honest with you, whether you work with them, your family members, and say, have you ever been sexually assaulted? I'm telling you, you will be completely devastated by how large the number is. I mean, it could be 100%. It's mm-hmm. something so significant. So we've got to give more voices. And that's what you're doing. You're providing voice.
Yes.
Tell me this. Is there anything else like particular about the book that you want our listeners to know? Like if they didn't, like for example, like if they were thinking, hey, I got a 14-year-old, either daughter or granddaughter, Mac, what do you think I should know? What do you think I should be thinking about to be a best grandfather, a father to this young lady?
I think just opening conversation about, you know, body image, sexual assault, like just your comfort, your own body. I mean, I think just saying like, it's okay to talk about anything that's going on with you. I mean, mental health, huge, just really kind of creating a trust relationship where they're not going to feel judged. They're not going to feel isolated. They're not going to feel like they can't tell you because they're scared of what, you know, judgment or how you're going to perceive things. I think really just building a safe place for them to be able to talk freely is the most important thing.
You know, Mac, that's so hard. It's so hard.
It is.
You know, it's funny. What I know is that women who have been through human trafficking, if we want to help them, the best thing we can do is let them tell their stories. Mm-hmm. And it's painful to hear their stories, you know. On a more localized level in my household, I always tell my girls, like, you can tell me anything. Please don't feel the need to tell me everything. One of my daughters was at whatever, 11
sounds
or
like my dad.
Yeah, no. One of my daughters was like 11 or 12 years old, and she came up to me, and she got in her first bra, and she wanted to show it to me. And so she was like, had it in this box. And she's like so excited. And I was in my head saying, John, she needs you. She needs you right now to affirm her. And I was just looking at her and I was like, oh, that's so great. I'm so happy for you. And I'm also dying. Like, this is so uncomfortable. And I finally looked at my wife and I was like, when's dinner? You know, like I was just like, let's put all that issue. Like, how's that chicken coming? You know, like, cause I was trying to like push it out. But you're saying, hey guys, like you need to work on this. Mm-hmm. You know, where there's a book I recommend. It's called Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters. And it was written by a doctor and it helped me because it went to some of these same subjects. And I tell young dads, I'm like, it's a painful read. It's a painful read because you learn just things like, you know, simple things you might say to your daughter, like the example I get off the cuff and not realize how powerful mm-hmm. that could be in the negative. But then the flip side is the beauty of father-daughter relationships. Like, you know, I always look at my daughters and mm-hmm. like, they're the only women in my life I just want to give. I don't want anything back. And then they're the only women in my life that like when I compliment them, they just completely receive it. Yeah, when you tell your daughter she's beautiful, she's not thinking, what do you want? You know, she'll just take it. And that's a beautiful thing.
It is.
Beautiful thing. And for young ladies who don't have dads, right, it's not ignoring that, mm-hmm. But it's acknowledging it and then really building the strength of their father and have them and then working to find healthy, probably women role models and healthy male role models and dealing with that as well.
Yeah, just definitely, you know, pinpointing the right role models is what I always say, because, you know, there's a lot of bad ones that a lot of people look up to. And I think that really does impact, you know, just their psyche and what they think is appropriate and not appropriate. And it can kind of alter their own morals, so to speak.
Yeah, I think a part of that what I always come back to is intimacy mm-hmm. and healthy intimacy. And part of that is just like living in the light. You know, like Mike Pence gets grief about like he doesn't be alone with women. And I'm like, gosh, I'd rather be Mike Pence than some of those other dudes, right? Mm-hmm. But it's in the balance of having healthy spaces and having hard conversations.
Yeah.
Well, Mac, you are delightful. I'm really proud of you. I'm thankful for your book. I'm thankful for your life. And your book is called Blatantly Honest, Normal Teen, Abnormal Life. I highly recommend it. I can't wait to read it. And I'm going to encourage our listeners to buy it and give it away as gifts. And so thank you for all you're doing. And let us know if there's anything that we can do for you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on today.
Absolutely. Mac the Model. How cool was that, man? Mike, that was cool.
That was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. Well, thanks for being here. This is John Crossman, the Crossman Conversation. And as always, support your local HBCU.
This has been Crossman Conversation, produced by a Crossman Career Builders Mark Radio Production.